listening, please, to PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the Sunday night edition of TS Radio. The only topic we discuss on these shows is the issue of guardianship abuse across the nation. It's epidemic. It is human trafficking. It is the most disgraceful situation you could possibly imagine. This evening, we are being co-hosted again by Beverly Newman. And Beverly, I want to thank you for coming on the show again.
Thank you, Marty.
And now, Beverly is an elder advocate in Florida, very well schooled in statute code and how things work. She is our resident expert for Florida. So if you have questions about that, you need to contact Beverly. Now, what I will say is this evening, our special guest is Janet Christensen O'Brien from Seattle Detective Agency, who has worked on some major cases, took one all the way to the Supreme Court. And when we bring her on, we're going to talk for about 45 minutes so all of you get an idea of what all she has been involved in, what she does daily, how she has approached this, how she tries to expose it. And after about 45 minutes, if you would like to call in with a question or comment relevant to our guest, please, please do. We would welcome your calls. In the interim, and before we bring Janet on air, this has just been an extraordinary week for me. I have been working with Lisa Belanger out there in Massachusetts, who is trying to extricate her father from a guardianship. He's on house arrest, basically. And as we've heard in so many other stories, he's basically imprisoned. And they are crushing up Seroquel in his food to medicate him against his will. They have done things to this man that absolutely would make you vomit if you read the legal briefs. And tomorrow Lisa goes into court to try once again to get the Supreme Judiciary of Massachusetts to strike down what this corrupt probate court has done and to hold these attorneys who were responsible for what happened in those courts accountable for what they've done. So, Lisa, I know you're listening. My prayers are with you. I'm sure everyone's prayers are with you. And please, I hope they give you time to speak. I read the brief myself over the last 2 days and her petitions. I have never seen such a compilation of chronological evidence of wrongdoing, blatant violations of the law, blatant violations of constitutional rights and due process, and she has it all documented, including court recordings of just how corrupt these judges have been. So, Lisa, my prayers are with you. I do whatever I can to help you.
And my prayers, too, of course, Marty. And this will be before the Massachusetts Supreme Court, or is this an appellate court? And they're having an oral hearing tomorrow?
Yes.
Oral argument?
And actually this is televised. So I'm hoping to get the website that I can pull this off of so that we can see Lisa. She said basically what happens every time she's tried to go to court is these judges, as we all know, refuse to let her say anything. She had one judge who openly admitted she didn't look at anything. She already made her decision. And
at least she was honest, right?
She
made her decision before she even weighed any evidence or reviewed any documents.
She refused. It's this, they call it, evasion of review. They simply refuse to look at the brief, look at any evidence that counters the opposition or the state's position, and then they, of course, claim they have plausible deniability. Nobody ever showed them that evidence. They had the evidence. They refused to review it. And then they go ahead and make a ruling, and it has become apparent in this case that decisions were made long before anybody ever showed up in court. It was already a done deal. And, of course, we've seen this happen time after time after time after time. These judicial boards in these states are a load of crap. These fiduciary oversight boards are a load of crap, and I keep holding up California's fiduciary oversight board. There's nothing on their webpage because this is just a collection of clowns collecting a paycheck. They don't do squat. And you cannot tell me, with the massive amount of reporting that has been done across this country about the abuse of our elderly individuals and the theft of estates while these people are in fact murdered, and this is what happens to many of them, that these legislators don't know, that these judges don't know, that the Department of Justice don't know, these SOBs sit on their hind ends and won't do squat.
The Government Accountability Office, the federal Government Accountability Office, periodically issues scathing reports against the guardianship system in terms of abuse and exploitation of our elders, and these reports don't change the system, but thank goodness they are there. We can use them in our own briefs, and we have to continue to forge forward for the sake of the warts. They are helpless. They are, as
they
you say, captive. They cannot make phone calls. They cannot have visitors. They cannot communicate in writing or orally with anyone without intervention or censorship, and that is totally against the law of every state in the United States.
Well, the one thing I have figured out here, Beverly, is the law doesn't mean squat. It means nothing. And why we have to keep going back to these courts, these corrupt courts. One of the things that people have said to me, now, Marty, you have to be nice, you have to be polite, you know, because otherwise they're going to get mad. Well, damn good, because I'm already mad. I don't care. This thing of having to kowtow to these people out of fear of retaliation, let them bring it on. Retaliate. We'll put it all over the place. And you can explain to the public why you abused your office and retaliated against someone who was trying to preserve the rights of a loved one or an elderly individual that they cared for. And
I know
who
got them out? In the state of Florida, the literature from the governor's office, from the Elder Affairs Department, always states that the wards of the state are our most vulnerable population. And that is absolutely true.
Go on to say, Beverly, is they are our most vulnerable population, and they are such easy pickings because we've paved the way for you to take every damn thing they got.
They are easy victims, absolutely. And we have to continue to move forward in advocating as vociferously and legitimately as possible for the most vulnerable population in the United States. There is no population in this country, in general, that is more vulnerable than the wards of the state, and by wards, they are in bondage. They have no rights that are not given to them, if ever, through guardians and through courts.
I tell you, it just makes me sick. I need to bring our guest on this evening, and I've been waiting a long time to get Janet on this show. We kind of worked together, collaborated on a few things here last year, and this is Janet O'Brien, and she runs Seattle Detective Agency, and she became involved in a case for a lady by the name of Dorothy Griega, and I'll let her explain that to you. This is the case that she did get all the way to the Supremes, who, of course, couldn't be bothered with anything like that, but still they reviewed it. She has done a massive amount of work investigating the fraud that goes on in these fiduciary predators' businesses. And so with that, I'm going to bring Janet on. This woman, she has done so much. She does a cable TV show called Public Interest, and she up in Seattle that she does on cable television. Lots of footwork, lots of hard work, lots of research. And Janet, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show this evening.
Thanks, Marty. I totally appreciate you tremendously. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show. And thank you for the PPJ Gazette blog that you did on the Dorothy Griega issue, too. You know, you're just such an advocate for helping people out there get justice, and I totally appreciate that. I'm working on 3 different guardianship cases right now, Dorothy Grega, Arthur Hayes, and Robert Hamlin cases. And all of these cases, the wards have been defrauded, and they've been, the attorneys have misrepresented their capacities to the courts, and the attorneys have defrauded them. I'll go into each case individually, if that's okay with you, Marty.
Sure, please do.
Okay. In the Dorothy Grega case, what happened there is she called me in March of 2007, and she kept calling me. She called me about 30 times, and she kept telling me that her attorney was ripping her off. And I finally went over to her house and listened to her story, and I realized that her attorney was really ripping her off. And we got an accountant on board whose name was Ron Hansen. Ron Hansen is an Edmonds, Washington accountant, and he looked at the stuff that I was doing, and he said that the EIN number that Richard Gregoric, who was an attorney, set up for Dorothy Grega, for the Grega Charitable Trust, the number on that EIN number was a fictitious number, and that Richard Gregoric had a woman named Victoria Salles, S-E-R-L-E-S, who was a trustee for the Charitable Trust. She went over to the Bank of America and set up a bank account using a fictitious name and a fictitious charitable trust number, and hid Dorothy Grega and Stephen Grega's money in that account, and they hid it from the IRS, and they hid it from Dorothy Grega. And we didn't find it until 2007. And then we found out that the account was opened with a check from BDO, and it was a check that was written on a U.S. bank account, and it was opened, and when the check was deposited, it was in the amount of $2,859 in April of 2004. And then in December of 2004, there was a wire transfer of $203,827.69 from Southwest Securities in Phoenix, Arizona, that was wire transferred into Dorothy Grega's account, that charitable trust. So what BDO did and what Kent West did, who was the trustee before Victoria took over, they hid money in all these different accounts in different states so that Dorothy and her husband, Stephen Grega, would not have the money that they thought they had from this charitable trust. And they were defrauded. And it was just a sad situation of Dorothy Grega asking all these different people, the Attorney General and everybody, Department of Social and Health Service, and all these different people for help because her attorney was ripping her off.
Janet?
She hired John Sinsheimer, who is a Seattle attorney, to file a malpractice case against Richard Gregoric for misappropriating her money. And John Sinsheimer was about to do that when the guardianship case was filed. What was happening in Dorothy Grega's life is she had not paid her tax returns in 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, and the IRS had put a tax lien on her banks and had put a tax lien on her property. And during this time period, Partners in Care, who was appointed as her guardian, had appointed to help her, had removed her money from Washington Mutual Bank during a tax lien and secretly put it into an account at U.S. Bank. And when they put it into an account at U.S. Bank, Partners in Care put it into an account number at U.S. Bank, account number 15359501150. Dorothy Grega's money was put into that account during a tax lien, and Partners in Care did not put Dorothy Grega's Social Security number on that account. And Partners in Care had 10 accounts at U.S. Bank,
Janet,
without any of the wards.
Janet?
Numbers on it.
Yes. Janet?
Yeah?
What is Partners in Care? You need to give us a little bit of time to absorb the various exploitations that are going on here. What is Partners in Care, and how did Partners in Care get into this picture with Dorothy Grega?
What happened is Dorothy Grega hired a woman named Janet Summers, who was a lawyer. And Janet Summers convinced Dorothy Grega to hire Partners in Care to help her with her finances and give them the power of attorney and probably act as their advocate for her. She did not authorize them to start stealing her money. So Dorothy Grega first had Richard Gregoric, who was an attorney, who stole money from her, and BDO stole money from her. So she hired Janet Summers to try to get the money back that BDO and Richard Gregoric had stolen from her. And then Partners in Care stole money from her. And they removed money during a tax levy, and they put it into an account at U.S. Bank. Now, the woman IRS agent that was working with Dorothy Grega during that time period, her name is Patricia Stauffer. And she's an IRS agent in Anchorage, Alaska, and she liked Dorothy, and she tried to help Dorothy get her finances in order, and she tried to help Dorothy because she heard Dorothy say that all these attorneys were ripping her off, and she tried to work with Dorothy to get her money back as well as me. So Dorothy was a whistleblower, and Patricia did her taxes for her, and then Dorothy sent her the money, and then Patricia asked Dorothy Grega point blank, did you put the money in U.S. Bank to defeat the levy? And Dorothy said, no, I did not. I did not authorize Partners in Care to remove my money from Washington Mutual when there was a tax levy on that account and to put it into another separate account under Partners in Care that didn't have any information with me on it. And so Patricia, Stauffer, with the IRS, knew that Partners in Care was involved in tax fraud. And Dorothy Grega wrote a letter to U.S. Bank. She hand-walked it into the Mercer Island U.S. Bank with a woman named Gloria, who was a personal friend of hers and her driver. She walked it into U.S. Bank to ask them to return her money that Partners in Care had removed. And U.S. Bank also never returned Dorothy Grega's money to her. And so Dorothy Grega tried to do all the things that she could in order to get justice for herself and for her husband.
Janet, let's review what Dorothy actually did. And this is all prior to the time she was in guardianship, correct?
Right. She
hired an attorney.
She hired several attorneys. She hired one attorney to file a lawsuit against Richard Gregoric to get the money back that he had stolen from her.
Was he her attorney as well? Was Richard Gregoric her attorney as well?
Yeah, Richard Gregoric was her and her husband's attorney, and they set up different tax structures for her. They set up a living trust for her, and they set up all these different things. And when Richard Gregoric did all this stuff, he was a KVI radio talk show host, and he was an attorney, and he used to help the public, all these elderly people, set up all these tax structures. And so she went in to see him because he was highly recommended, and he just ripped her off. And He ripped her off of money. He set up a living trust. And when he set up the living trust with the IRS and it got issued an EIN number, he set that living trust up, listing his daughter as the third-party beneficiary to Dorothy Grega's living trust.
So that was a huge conflict of interest. And
it was also fraud.
And the fraud was that the employer identification number was not really correct?
No, the fraud was that when Victoria, who also worked for Richard Gregoric, went into the Bank of America, Victoria used the EIN number that Richard Gregoric had got for the living trust, for the 2004 living trust, and Victoria used that same EIN number and said it was for a 1996 charitable trust. Because when all of these attorneys set up this charitable trust in 1996, and using the collateral to fill the charitable trust of an office building that was a medical office and a parking lot and all these different things that poured into this charitable trust, they never set up an EIN number and never registered that charitable trust with the government and never paid real legitimate taxes on it and never told Stephen and Dorothy Greger about that. So she thought she had all
these lawyers.
Dorothy
Greger got so far behind in her taxes? Is this correct?
So what happened is Victoria Salas, S-E-R-L-E-S, of BDO, filed tax returns for the charitable trust using the EIN number of the living trust, and she filed those tax returns with the IRS, and she didn't even put the $200,000 that was in the Bank of America on those tax returns, and Victoria also put Oppenheimer and all these other stocks that didn't really exist. So Victoria filed fraudulent tax returns with the IRS that had the Greger Charitable Trust name on them.
And then
you reported
this to the IRS yourself.
And
Dorothy
Greger
reported
it to the IRS.
And what has the IRS done in terms of prosecuting or pursuing these individuals who have exploited Dorothy Greger?
I don't know what they've done because so far nobody has amended the tax returns and nobody's really gone after them. But the thing is that Dorothy Greger, as a whistleblower, reported this to the IRS because the accountant she hired, Ron Hansen, told her that the EIN number that she had and the tax returns that BDO filed for her were fraudulent. And so she tried to amend those tax returns herself, and then the guardianship was entered, and as a condition of the guardianship, it removed her from being able to hire lawyers, bankers,
correct,
accountants, and medical doctors. So when the guardianship was ordered and she was declared incompetent as a result of the guardianship, she could no longer use the attorney she had hired. She could no longer pursue the bar complaint she had filed. She could no longer use her medical doctors, which she liked. And she could no longer use her accountant, which wanted to clear up all the fraudulent tax returns.
So she went under full plenary guardianship of the person and the property?
Yeah. They entered a guardianship, and as soon as they entered a guardianship, they removed her from her house. They changed her phone number so people couldn't get a hold of her, and they moved her out of the area so that nobody could find her. The house that she lived in was sold for $1.3 million, and there's no documentation in the probate of where that $1.3 million went. It wasn't itemized in the guardianship for her, and it wasn't itemized in the probate. And even her daughter in the probate signed an affidavit with the court that she only received $100,000 in her mother's estate. Well, what happened to the $1.3 million of the house that was sold? That money disappeared too. All of the Southwest Securities money disappeared. All the money in U.S. Bank that Partners in Care stole disappeared. All the money from Bank of America disappeared. All the money.
Who actually had access to this money, according to
the lawyers and BDO
the
and
lawyers
Southwest
for
Party,
whom?
U.S.
The lawyers.
Bank money through Partners in Care. She did not have access to the Partners in Care money because Partners in Care removed her money and they put it into an account at U.S. Bank that did not have her name on it. Partners in Care has 10 accounts at U.S. Bank with millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they hold it in trust for elderly people, but they do not have any of the elderly people's Social Security numbers on that money, and they just commingle it, and they don't make any accounting. And even the IRS did not know about the money that Partners in Care and BDO and Southwest Securities had of the Greger money.
Let me ask you this.
Totally tax fraud.
Has anyone attempted to take money out of those accounts?
Well, we don't even know how much money is in those accounts. And the IRS, it's their position. They are the ones that are in a better position because Dorothy Greger, before she died, she was a witness to, and she called up Patricia, and Patricia told her that she was going to refer it to the fraud division of the IRS, and I know that Patricia did that. Patricia said to me, even years after Dorothy Greger died, that she was still working on getting justice for Dorothy Greger. Patricia really liked Dorothy.
Now, have you personally filled out a whistleblower application for the IRS since you are familiar with the details of money that is being generated, but taxes are not being paid?
See, what happens nowadays, in the olden days, you used to fill out stuff. Nowadays,
yes.
What happens is I call Patricia, STAUFFER, at 907-271-6963, and I give her that information, and she refers it over to the fraud division.
Well, actually, there is on the Internet absolutely an IRS whistleblower application.
And I send that out too, but those people don't get a hold of me. Patricia always talks to me and lets me know that her information is being referred on. If you contact that number and you do it on the Internet as a whistleblower, nobody ever sends you a letter and they don't get a hold of you. So I like personally working with people. It's like Howard Pellet. I worked for him for 8 years, and he's an IRS agent. And I worked with him for 8 years, and he always kept me informed as to the progress of the case against Palmquist. And then 8 years, he finally indicted Craig S. Palmquist for 8 counts of fraud.
Now, so this is on a different case. I want our audience to understand you're now talking about another case. This is not
right.
The Dorothy Griega case, but this is a case in which there was IRS fraud, tax fraud, and due to Janet's persistence for 8 years, there is an attorney who defrauded and embezzled a trust.
Another attorney.
Yes.
Who
has been prosecuted. He's been convicted, right? And disbarred?
No, he was cited on 8 counts of fraud, and he skipped the country and he went to Belize. But the IRS.
But he was disbarred.
And the Bar Association disbarred him. So he was a partner at Lane Powell, Moss & Miller. He was a golden child, and his name was Craig S. Palmquist. He was the youngest partner they ever had, and he embezzled money from 8 different accounts of trust fund money. And one of the accounts where he embezzled money from Harry Plattis and Donald L. Hubbard. Donald L. Hubbard was going through a divorce at the time, and he had $300,000 of excess cash, and he didn't want to tell his wife at the time that he had that much money, and he invested it with Craig S. Palmquist. And,
but
then,
this is not a guardianship case, correct?
It was not a guardianship case. It was a case of embezzlement and fraud. But it
right.
was a case involving another attorney whose name was Craig S. Palmquist, and the Bar Association did do something about that case. They did disbar Craig S. Palmquist,
and
the IRS did do something about that case. They indicted Craig S. Palmquist on 8 counts of fraud. So Howard Pellet was the IRS guy that I was working with, and Gary Reese was the U.S. Customs guy that I was working with, and Howard and Gary worked for 8 long years, and they finally succeeded in getting Craig S. Palmquist indicted. So sometimes these cases take a long time.
Yes, but we're very, very thankful for your success in getting at least one attorney who has exploited a trust fund to be indicted and disbarred.
Yeah, and in that case,
thank you for that accomplishment, which I know was very, very labor intensive on your part.
And then, all of the 3 other guardianship cases that I'm working on right now, each one of the wards has been defrauded by the attorneys involved in the case.
Now, were these the attorneys appointed by the court? Or
they were attorneys in the guardianship in Dorothy Griega's case. Sally Lanham represented Dorothy Griega's daughter, Donna Mae Curley. And Donna Mae Curley wanted her mother dead. She hated her mother and she hated her brother. And what happened is Dorothy Griega's son, Dan Curley, died a week before the guardianship was filed. And Donna Mae Curley did not come up when her brother was dying and didn't help her mother with the funeral arrangements, and then just filed the guardianship to take over her mother and Steve and Greg's estate after her brother died. And
now, would you tell us about your case before the U.S. Supreme Court? Because I know
the same Dorothy Gregg case, and it's Donna Mae Curley is the daughter, and so I was arguing that these attorneys misrepresented their capacity to the court, because Gregory Miller, who represented Dorothy Gregg in the appeal and in the Washington State Supreme Court, he never talked to Dorothy Gregg in his life, and that's a violation of ethics. An attorney has to discuss strategy and mail things to their client. Gregory Miller mailed stuff to Dorothy Gregg's daughter's lawyer, Sally Lanham. Sally Lanham assaulted me in court. She accessed my bank deposit slips without a court order, and she engaged in false swearing and fraud, and she was not Dorothy Gregg's lawyer. And Dorothy Gregg had never met Gregory Miller in her life, and Gregory Miller sent his bills for representing Dorothy Gregg to Sally Lanham and never sent them to Dorothy Gregg. And I argued that he misrepresented his capacity to the court and that it was a due process violation. The Supreme Court, on January 2012, I sent it off. Mr. Gregory Miller waived responding.
This is the United States Supreme Court.
No, the United States Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. Yeah. The United States Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. Accepted my writ of certiorari for conference. That means four Supreme Court judges look at it. It went to conference on September 24th, and then it got declined on October 1st. So
you were notified of this by mail from the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yeah, it just gets declined. That means that they have so many cases before them that they're not going to hear this one and allow you to argue it in the U.S. Supreme Court, but at least somebody did look at it. So I'm very grateful that somebody in the U.S. Supreme Court, one of the justices, looked at it and thought it was of merit to send it off to the conference, because a lot of cases do not get in conference. Gregory Miller, who was the opposing attorney in this case, has had a lot of cases in the U.S. Supreme Court, but he's never had any of them accepted. So my case was the only one he's ever had before the U.S. Supreme Court. So it showed on the records that I had one case before the 2008 term, and he only had one case. So my case is the only case that has ever, he has represented, that's ever gone up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's really a big deal that cases go up that far. And you had a case also that went up to that stage.
Yes, and ours was filed on October 7, 2011. Excuse me, it was written by Edward McGlynn Gaffney, Jr., who is a constitutional law expert. And it was based upon the total lack of due process that my father, Al Katz, was given in the guardianship system, in which his court-appointed attorney, Ernie Lish, never called him, never visited him, never filed a single piece of paper, never filed a habeas corpus, while my father was put into a Baker Act for 3 weeks. Baker Act under the law is supposed to be a maximum of 72 hours. My father was in Baker Act for 3 weeks with a no contact order so that he could not communicate with family, neighbors, friends, congregants from his synagogue. My father was a Holocaust survivor, 89 years old. And Ernie Lish, during that period of time, as my father's court-appointed attorney while he was in guardianship, a ward of the state of Florida, charged out 8 $1,000 during the that 3-week period when he never saw my father, never phoned him, never attended a hearing, never filed anything with the court, never filed a habeas corpus, and the Supreme Court of the United States, although this case represents total lack of due process, denied hearing the case.
And that's what happened in my case. But in my case, I handled it pro se, and I filed the writ of cert myself. And your father's case is very similar to the Robert Hamlin case, in which a guardianship was entered, and the court entered a protection order against the wife from being allowed to remove her husband from the VA hospital for a period of 5 years, and the guardian who was appointed removed money from their joint bank accounts without a court order, and Robert Hamlin was prevented from leaving the VA hospital, and he was abused and died at the VA hospital. And
this is beyond criminal.
It's beyond criminal.
That
the condition
are veterans, are Holocaust survivors, are elders of every race and religion, are being held hostage for the profit of the system. The system is making huge amounts of money. Married couples are being separated.
Yep.
And families are being destroyed.
Yep. And in the Howard...
It's the new crime of the century. It's committing the crime of aging with assets.
Yes.
I have to keep going back to Linda Kincaid's comment here a few shows back where she talked about APS and said, if their actual intent was to protect these people and put people under guardianship who needed protection, the streets are littered with them. But these people have no assets. They have no bank accounts. They have no property. They have nothing that they can take from them. So they step over them, and they look for these elderly individuals who have large estates and immediately set the ball into motion. One of the things I believe needs to be done post-haste is to end adult protective services. This is a threat to older community.
They're participating to get people into these illegal guardians and steal people's estates. In the Robert Hamlin thing, Avis Hamlin has been charged over $80,000 in legal fees by the guardians' illegal activities. And in the Arthur Hayes case, Arthur Hayes was charged $600,000 in legal fees in that guardianship case. In just 2011, $600,000 in attorney fees for attorneys he never wanted, for a guardianship he doesn't want to be in.
The attorney for my father's guardian of the property and the guardian of the property charged just right under $50,000 after my father had passed away.
Yeah, it's a crime. It's just totally a crime that these attorneys can get away with misrepresenting their capacity and overbilling the estates to such an extent. In the Robert Hamlin case, Jennifer Poharski, which is an assistant attorney general, went into court on a day that the courthouse was closed because of snow, and she went in and had a special hearing with Commissioner Nancy Bradburn Johnson with the courthouse closed and decided hearings about the guardianship case without anybody having access to the courts. That's how corrupt it is in Washington State. It's a shame.
And that is very corrupt.
The people are being defrauded.
No recording of the hearing and no court reporter?
The hearing has a recording. It has two miscellaneous people that nobody knows who they are. There's a woman's voice and a man's voice, Jennifer Poharski and the judge. And the courthouse was closed. In Washington State, Article 1, Section 10, Article 1, Section 20 say that the public is allowed in the courtroom. The courthouse was closed because it was a court closed day because it was snowing outside and everybody couldn't go anywhere because it was closed. And Jennifer Poharski and Commissioner Nancy Bradburn Johnson held a hearing anyway, and they determined to extend the guardianship and extend the protection order against Avis Hamlin removing her husband from the VA hospital when there wasn't even any motions before the court. And then 2 weeks later, they granted the guardianship illegally because of that extension of that hearing on a closed snow day.
Now, this was a hearing on emergency temporary guardianship or on Baker Act?
No, the hearing was set with no hearing schedule at all, and
right.
The judge and the Jennifer Barsky just went in because she missed the hearing 2 days before that because it snowed, and so she wanted to continue the hearing. There wasn't anything scheduled. There was nothing scheduled, and so she wanted to schedule a hearing for February 1st so that she could have her friend, who is a guardian, appointed as guardian of Robert Hamlin when nobody was before the court to be appointed. And Dan Smirkin was appointed, and he had never submitted any prior paperwork. In Washington State, you've got to submit a petition for guardianship 20 days in advance of a hearing. Nothing like that was ever done.
You know, in my father's case in Florida, the papers were submitted that day.
You can't do that. You have to give people notice. And that's
they had
the illegal
been working
hearing
on
too,
it for...
but nobody cares. Nobody listens to how these people just get shuffled and their rights just get eliminated. We have no equal protection.
That is probably the worst but possibly truest statement you could make, that once in this position, these people have no protection. They are at the mercy of these predators. These courts are so corrupt. The stench from them is like smelling a sewer open up. These attorneys that line the walls filing motions into these cases, they're never determined if they're beating that estate to death, tapping it for fees. Their motions are never determined to be vexatious or frivolous, but if you try to oppose them tapping that estate, then your motion is vexatious and frivolous. One of the things that I wanted to find out, Janet, in what you've dealt with in all these cases, what I keep hearing happening around the country is judges telling people who are fighting to stop these guardianships that they no longer can file any motions, they can't speak in the courtroom, they can't do anything. This is a violation not only of their rights, but of the victim's rights.
It's an intimidation.
And, yes.
It's an intimidation of us as public citizens. In my case, I tried to enter as an interested party for Dorothy Grega because I realized that her rights were being abused, and they said I have no standing. And I was trying to argue that the attorneys have never met her, so they have no standing. But that's true. That's how they exclude you from the court hearings.
And that thing
it's a
about
crying
standing,
shame that they
that
can,
of,
can intimidate
ahead.
You.
Well, that thing about standing, I'm sick to death of hearing how we have no standing.
I know,
care what issue you're dealing with. These courts routinely, this is the standard, get rid of it all, you have no standing. You have no standing. My contention is that court has no standing.
Right.
Those attorneys who are looting that estate have no standing. These
and they
people
can't
should
be above the law, but they are above the law, and it's being allowed.
It's just an industry. Yes.
It's a very, very, very profitable industry on the backs of the most vulnerable population in the United States of America.
Yeah, when Arthur Hayes is charged $600,000 in attorney fees for attorneys he never hired because he's worth $20 million, that's a travesty of justice.
Yes.
My God.
Yeah.
And they'll keep hitting it until they get the whole $20 million.
Yeah. And I filed a bar complaint against those attorneys because Michael Longyear, who is the same attorney in the Dorothy Grega case, Michael Longyear is in Arthur Hayes' case as Arthur Hayes' guardian and also as the member of his LLC and the manager of his company. And I think that's inherently wrong.
So let's go over that again, please.
They don't care.
The attorney who is appointed by the court?
By the
correct?
Court to be his guardian? The guardian of the person and the guardian of his state. He's the attorney as a guardian, and then he's an attorney as a member of Arthur Hayes' company, his LLC, and he's converting all of his wife's separate living and charitable trust, all his trust estates, into assets they can liquidate.
For God's sake.
It's just horrible.
So it's a total conflict of interest.
Yes.
And
it's for profit.
They love to liquefy real assets.
Exactly.
So that once it's turned into money instead of property, it's much harder to trace where it goes.
And as Michael Longyear justifies to the Bar Association, he says in this letter, the fees and costs in the November 2011 trial of attorney Howell and Hertog, as well as the guardian ad litem, exceeded $500,000. He didn't do it, but he's saying everybody else charged that much against the Arthur D. Hayes guardianship case, case number 11-01787-4, SEA. I mean, that's a travesty. When you bill a guardianship case $500,000 for just a trial.
And what was the trial?
It was to declare him incompetent and to decide if Longyear was going to be the guardian and Hertog was going to be the guardian ad litem, who's who and where they fit in. And
so
to get rid of
Susan Howell. Was this a contested guardianship?
Yeah, it's a guardianship case. In this case,
was it contested?
The state, we have all sorts of attorneys hired for all sorts of capacities, and the estate of whoever is the ward has to pay for all those people.
Absolutely.
You can have five or six different people who are lawyers representing various things, and the poor little ward has to pay for everybody.
Absolutely. Every time we went to court or had to prepare for court, it was almost $600 an hour.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And that goes very quickly, and that includes their conversations on the telephone, their emails to each other, their traveling time, their meetings after the court hearing, joking about what happened. The ward is paying for all of that.
And Arthur Hayes, he doesn't want these people, and he would like to be able to do the taxes on his corporations and be able to gift to the one daughter and two sons, because if he doesn't gift it this year, then he's going to have to pay a lot more taxes on it. But the guardian has told him he can't make any gifts anymore because he's in a guardianship. So he cannot take care of his own tax liability now. And if he dies, his estate is going to owe millions and millions and millions in tax liability, and the LLC hasn't paid tax for years, and they're going to owe tax liability. So in the Arthur Hayes case, as well as in the Dorothy Grega case, in both of those cases, the attorneys were preventing the taxes from being done.
And that's exactly what we are facing to this very day, IRS liens, because my father's guardian of the property refused to pay the taxes.
He refused to pay all income taxes. Yeah, it's just a horrible.
And then the estate is left to pay, and the estate didn't even have enough for the funeral, let alone to pay scores of thousands of dollars in taxes.
And if Arthur Hayes had been able to gift away some things to the kids that he has, the two sons and the daughter, that would help him with his tax liability.
Yeah.
Hertog said that he can't gift anything, period. And that's costing the estate money. And so they aren't considering the tax ramifications of the guardianship and what they're doing.
They get away with tax fraud, apparently, on a massive basis.
And they don't care.
They get away with it. They're not concerned about it on three different forms. In three different months, the guardian of the property said, do not withhold. Do not withhold. Do not withhold. And he hasn't had to pay a cent. He used all of the money that was supposed to be paid to the U.S. government to pay himself and his attorney.
And that is another significant problem. Because
yes.
They are not looking after the best interest of the ward, and they aren't considering at all the estate or the heirs. And just the trouble that they're going to have trying to figure out what happened in the mess.
Well, I think that they are very, very comfortable and lackadaisical about their ability to defraud the wards and to leave the back taxes to the estates.
And that's just horrible. Because sometimes the back taxes go on and on and on, far exceeding the estate, and it bankrupts the kids. You know, because you've got a state tax for the state that you're in, you've got federal estate tax, then you've got the back taxes that are owed for the capital gains, and you've got all these different taxes that are owed, and when the houses are liquidated and the house might be in a living trust and they're liquidated, the attorneys aren't considering any of those tax ramifications.
Well, I think they are. I think that as long as they're not responsible for paying those taxes, or let's put it this way, they're not being held responsible for paying those taxes, and they are benefiting financially themselves, paying that money that belongs to the federal government to themselves, they don't care.
Yeah, I agree.
They absolutely don't care. And
yeah.
when I brought it before the court, and the transcripts show this very clearly, I said, we have a huge tax morass. My
yeah.
father owes, and this is after my father had passed away, my father owes tens of thousands of dollars to the federal government for back taxes, and the guardian of the property is right here in the courtroom. He refused to pay them.
Right, and that's just scary.
And what happened was the judge found against me and ordered that the guardian of the property and his attorney, who was plotting to get me removed as guardian of the person, and we had that in an email, the judge gave them every cent that was left in the guardianship account. Every cent. And nothing
he paid
at all
considering
the
quantity. The
taxes.
It's horrible. Yeah, they don't realize how broken these guardianships are and what the tragedies that they're causing. Now,
I disagree with that.
Richard Furman Jr. in the tax issue too, and the bar finally did an admiration of him because of his involvement in the Dorothy Craig and Arthur Hayes case.
I think Marty and I have a difference of opinion with what you said with respect to the guardians and the attorneys don't know what they're doing to the families. They do know. I have emails in which my attorney, who was paid about $27,000 for my father's case, and the guardian of the property and his attorney, so two attorneys and one guardian, I have their emails in which they are joking about getting me to be removed as the guardian of the person so that they can go up to Indiana and take the real property there, make that into liquid assets, and put my father into a nursing home against my will and against his will and against his advance directives. They know exactly what they're doing. Exactly.
Yeah, they don't even listen to the advanced directives.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No,
and
Avis
have,
and Robert Hamlin had an advanced directive, and Robert clearly wanted Avis Hamlin to take care of him, and they just totally ignored that.
But I still advise people, have your advanced directives in place. It's a layer of possible protection. It's a buffer. It's something that it reinforces what the ward actually wants. Now, certainly it can be disregarded, and it is very, very often disregarded, but not every time. I'm working on a case right now in which we have advanced directives, and we're using those, God willing, to overturn a guardianship. So they are important. And very, very sadly, they are abused and ignored and denied sometimes, but it's still something that you want to have in place. Don't you agree?
I totally agree. I think powers of attorneys and advanced directives, if you have nothing, then you're who knows who can come in.
Now,
but
the
a lot
case
of times,
I'm working on
right
now.
Eliminate your rights by those without any due process of law. The attorneys just disregard the family or the public or whatever.
And it's brought before the court. I mean, the case I have right now, the attorneys just and guardian just simply denied that there were advanced directives. And
yes.
I've already gotten a hold of some of them, and we're working to get rest of them, and we're going to put them on the court record. These are the advanced directives.
Records.
They do exist.
Yeah. You're better off putting as much information in the record as possible because you have to have a record. And a lot of attorneys don't put enough in the record.
A
you
lot of attorneys are selling their clients out.
Yeah,
they
there
do
you
that
go.
On purpose to hurt the client's arguments later if you have to appeal it.
Oh, absolutely.
The thing about in all of this that really bugs me is that if well, among many, many things that do, but the fact is if you went into court as an attorney with this haphazard, half done, didn't do my job, didn't take care of my client, didn't speak up and defend them, they'd be bounced out of court and they'd lose their license. But when it comes to our elderly, this is standard operating procedure. There is no law. There are no rules. The rules only apply, and they can change at any time, according to that judge sitting up there. By the way, that is not a judge. Let me clarify that. That is not a judge. That is an administrative official. It is not a Your Honor. It is not Your Holiness. It is not a recognized judge. It is not anything but someone who is masquerading as a judge. These are administrative courts. And this is an administrator, and that's all these people are. And I have been in court where they have said to me, you'll refer to me as Your Honor, and I have said, no, actually I won't. You're not a Your Honor, and you're not a judge. You're an administrative agent, and I will refer you to by your proper name. These people are not judges. And most of them have no legal training. They are somebody's golf buddy, somebody's brother-in-law, somebody's friend down the street, somebody they owe a favor to, and they are put in these positions. And they do not administer law. They administer code and statute, contract law. That's
and what
all they
I
do.
Am alarmed about is that they know that the attorneys are involved in false swearing, and they allow it. And they
promote
it.
And
in all the cases I've worked on in guardianship cases, the attorneys have all engaged in false swearing to the detriment of the ward. And, like, for me personally, I was assaulted in court by Sally Lanham, who is Donna Mae Curley's lawyer. I was assaulted by a lawyer in court, and nobody did anything about it.
What did Sally do?
Sally Lanham accessed my bank deposit slips and cash-out tickets without a court order, and nobody did anything about it. They've intimidated me as a witness, and nobody's doing anything about it. These judges and these attorneys are getting away with this, and nobody cares about the law. It's just scary.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the law. Nothing to do with the law.
It's scary.
Well, and this is the reason I believe, Janet, that when you try to get in front of judicial review boards, this is just a good old boys club. This is a closed union shop, and they're going to protect their members no matter how corrupt, no matter what kind of thug or criminal they are. They're going to protect them because there's money in it for everybody.
And every time I do a bar complaint, I tell the Bar Association that as far as I'm concerned, everything I'm writing is public, and I do stories on my TV show about it. My TV show is Public Interest Issues, and it's Public Interest Issues Show, and all of these things I have documented on my TV shows, and I think that's the only way we're protected, by your shows, by TV shows, by getting these stories out to the public. We need to keep getting these stories out to the public.
Well,
and
we've got Babs
very,
Cooper
very
that, too, that do a cable show that they devote a great amount of time to this. Chicago is a little house of horrors when it comes to probate, as I think most counties have become across the country. Janet, you talked about your cable show. You've done a lot of things here, and I'd like you to talk just a little bit about that, what you do on these shows and what the response to them is.
We have about 150,000 viewers, and we're all over the world. It's a worldwide show, and it's called Public Interest Issues Show. And I've also done independent films, so I also have my films on IMDb, and I did a show on Dorothy Gregg and Robert Hamlin, and that independent film was Fraud in the Inception, Who Killed Dorothy Gregg and Robert Hamlin? And I've done a lot of TV shows on Robert Hamlin, Dorothy Gregg, and Arthur Hayes, and the corruption of the guardianship cases. And I also did a show on Thank You, Marty Oakley, for all the wonderful work you've done to keep the public safe. And my shows are aired twice a week, and they're always on the Internet.
And how can they find them on the Internet, Janet?
They go to Public Interest Issues Show, and it'll pop my shows up, or they go to Seattle Community Media, which is a public access channel, and then they go to Public Interest Issues Show, or you can put in my name, Janet Christensen O'Brien, JanetChristensenOBrien, on IMDb, and it'll pop up my independent films. And there's just a lot of stuff on the Internet. I've done things on indie media. I've done things on all sorts of websites on corruption and fraud.
Excellent. Excellent.
And I totally appreciate your help. And my company is Seattle Detective Bureau. And it's located in Seattle. And it's my sponsor, and that's why I have the opportunity to put my shows on the air. And so I've been in business since 1979, and we specialize in investigations, and we do missing people. And these kind of cases are very, very significant and very important. And, Marty, your work on this is just extremely important. I'll always be indebted to you for just how kind you are.
Well, don't.
I love having these kind of shows on the air, and it's shows like yours to get people aware of it. I've contacted all sorts of people. Carl Levin at Washington, D.C. During the Washington Mutual hearings, I wrote him on different things about guardianship abuse, and he was very gracious in accepting my facts. They're very, very nice. And you just never know where you can contact people and who's going to listen. But we all have to keep talking. As long as we're talking and participating in forums like this, then the public will be informed.
And you're literally saving lives. You know, if one broadcast, one broadcast, or one part of one broadcast actually moves someone to protect an elder, that is saving a life.
Because these attorneys have participated in the death of Robert Hamlin and Dorothy Gregg. Sally Lanham, Michael Longyear, Gregory Miller, they participated in the death of Dorothy Grega.
Can you explain that, please?
Jennifer Baharsky participated in the death of Robert Hamlin. If it hadn't been for these illegal guardianship cases and for them trying to operate in secrecy, you know, and in the Dorothy Grega case, the guardianship removed her from going to her medical doctors that she liked. It removed her from using the attorneys that she was using and she liked. It removed her from having her accountants. The guardianship actively participated in her death. And because she was a whistleblower, that's why I truly believe they started the guardianship case. And Robert Hamlin was also a whistleblower because he was moved from the VA hospital by Terry Mae Hickman to Seymour, and they got a kickback. And then we had to hire an attorney to get him out of Seymour. And then he needed medical treatment, and he went into the VA, and they got a guardianship entered, and he was never allowed to leave. So Jennifer Baharsky participated in the death of Robert Hamlin, and the other attorneys I mentioned, Sally Lanham, Gregory Miller, and Michael Longyear participated in the death of Dorothy Grega. And I do not want Michael Longyear to participate in the death of Arthur Hayes. Arthur Hayes is alive. He does not want this guardianship case. He has a $20 million estate. And now Michael Longyear is the manager of his LLC and running as the manager of his company. That should be wrong. And the Bar Association is doing nothing to protect the public. And I have reported this to different agencies. I've reported it to the IRS. I've reported it to the FBI. I've reported it to the Bar Association. And I don't know if anybody is doing anything, but we still have to tell people, don't act in silence. Get your story out there. The only way we're going to make change is by telling somebody what we see.
And
go ahead, Beverly.
I was agreeing with her that this is sending warnings out to people preemptively as well as in terms of remediation. You know, once there is a guardianship, there are steps that you can take to try to expose and to eliminate the guardianship. And before there's a guardianship in place, there are steps that you can use to preempt a guardianship.
But
if you don't know what to look
for, all
you can't do it.
Well, I am coming more and more to the conclusion that the only way to beat this system at all is to get out of the probate court. What we have here is evidence of civil actions that are criminal in nature. And if we can get out of these damn probate courts and charge these people, there again, they say, oh, you can't go after the judge because the judge has immunity. And like I said, first and foremost, this is not a judge. This is an administrative agent. They have no immunity. Then the any third-party contractor, a nursing home, the predatory fiduciaries, these attorneys, whomever, they're third-party contractors. And
but
they have tried to claim immunity.
Illegal, it should be
Pardon?
Reviewed.
Yeah. And
not
it,
above
but,
the law.
Yep, no, but they do not have immunity. And that judge,
that's
phony
true.
Judge,
that's
cannot
true.
Give them immunity
the
because that's not in their authority.
The person who has the title judge definitely has immunity in our court system.
If they do something that is outside of the scope of their authority, they do not have immunity.
That is correct. If they do something that is outside of the scope of their authority, they do not have immunity, and it has to be really outside of the scope of their authority.
When Commissioner Nancy Bradburn Johnson held a hearing on a snow day, that should be criminal. And nobody cares, but I think it should be criminal that somebody should look into the fact that a commissioner at King County Superior Court is holding hearings when the courthouse itself is closed to the public. Somebody should look into the fact that Charles Wiggins who is a sitting Washington State Supreme Court justice engaged in false swearing to extort money. Those kind of things, those people should be, not be above the law. And right now, I brought that to the attention of the court, and nobody's doing anything. That was my legal argument also in the Supreme Court of the United States. But the problem is we've got to get our stories out there, and we can't let these people get away with it just because we're afraid of them. I'm afraid of them, but if I stay silent, nothing will happen. That's
exactly
what Mary Reese, U.S. Customs, said. I left town because my life was threatened because I was a witness. And he said, if you don't come back, nothing will ever be done. So I came back, and I worked with Gary Reese, who introduced me to Fred Gut, who's FBI. And if I hadn't come back, Palmquist would never have been indicted by the IRS. But sometimes we just have to make a decision because it is very, very scary to be a whistleblower. And we're all whistleblowers.
Well, and that's, I'm telling you this stuff, the thing for me is this, I have not been personally subjected to this as an outside observer, and having read the number of cases and petitions and motions and court documents and listened to the recordings of these judges, I have seen transcripts altered and changed so that they said something entirely different than what the original court transcript said. And nobody does anything.
That's why I hire my own private court reporter when I go into a hearing. Because the tape that the judge has at his fingertips, he can stop that tape at any time and then activate it. So if you are going into a hearing, get your own court reporter to also be present to transcribe the record.
Yes, that is very important. You're absolutely right.
That's what I
do. And then besides getting your own court reporter, before she finalizes the document, you need to proof it. Because she can make honest errors. So it's very important to proof the document, the transcript.
But when you have a hearing in a courtroom and you know that judge could be suspect, you always bring a court reporter in. It's your only protection that you have. Because judges have a tendency to do things quietly and in sidebar without anybody hearing, and you want a record of everything that transpires.
Excellent advice.
And also, you want to tell your court reporter, even after the judge adjourns the hearing, if there is dialogue going on or the judge is speaking, to continue to record.
And that's totally true.
Yeah,
my
court
reporter always knows that she or he will transcribe it until I say, okay, we're done.
Yes.
Because there's always sidebar conversations that occur after the judge has said, okay, we're done.
Right.
And those conversations are very, very important.
Yes, many times the conversations off the record, so to speak, are very key to your case.
And nothing is ever off the record in a courtroom.
Well, but the judge says we're off the record now, and the court reporter stops transcribing.
Right. You want it on. You want it on.
Yes.
And a lot of times, judges, to protect themselves and the attorneys that they like, they will turn the tape off.
Yes.
Because in Washington State, a lot of times we do not have court reporters in courtrooms anymore. We have tapes.
Right.
And so I bring a court reporter in there because they record as well as the judge with the tape, and the judge sometimes will turn off the tape during crucial parts of an argument because they do not want that a part of the record. But if you have a court reporter there, it's all a part of the record. And that's very,
Excellent. Very
significant.
And it's the same thing with...
If you think there's any bias or self-dealing, you want to have a complete record.
It's the same thing with a deposition. Yeah, many times they will stop a deposition and then there will be various conversations going on that really need to be recorded, and they're not being recorded.
And sometimes the attorneys will not allow your court reporter in a deposition if they're the ones that have ordered a court reporter. So depositions in Washington State are different, and you could get in trouble for having a court reporter if they've already got their own and they're the ones that have called the deposition.
Uh-huh.
So it's different in Washington State. Because I did that myself. I had my own court reporter at a deposition, and they wouldn't allow it, and they called the judge, and the judge wouldn't allow my court reporter. Because it was not my deposition, it was their deposition.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so it's really, it's threatening and intimidating. And the other day when I was on the phone to you, Marty,
yes.
When I left my office, there were two police officers outside my door who had been sitting out there for 2 hours listening to my conversation with you.
Well, tell those SOBs I said hello.
Yeah, it was Officer St. John, and she was wondering, on the guardianship cases. So, you know, there's always threatening and intimidation.
How did they know that you were on the phone with Marty?
They were just sitting outside eavesdropping on me. You know, I get threatened all the time. You know, a few years ago, a guy from the Department of License and another woman were sitting outside my office for 2 days, threatening me that they were going to take my license. You know, these guardianship cases get really spooky because these attorneys can throw you in jail for almost anything. You know, contempt of court, failing to cooperate, whatever. It's really scary what they do in this state.
And that's what I try to explain to the families of the wards. When the wards make statements that sound totally against the way they've always behaved in their lifetime, it's because they are being intimidated.
Yeah,
they,
and it's really
scary.
They
are scared to death.
They have no protection.
They have no protection. They know they have no protection, and they will say anything in order to save their lives.
Yeah, and Sally Lanham, every time I used to go to court, she used to threaten putting me in jail. You know, put me in jail for this, put me in jail for that. It's just, it's amazing, for contempt of court, for whatever, you know, for putting my TV shows on the air. You know, she threatened the TV station I work at. She's always threatening in whatever she's threatening, but she doesn't explain what it is. But because she's an attorney and she pushed me and she assaulted me in court and she accessed my bank deposit slips, you know, these people are above the law. They have all sorts of friends, and all their friends do special favors for them.
Well, let's face it, Enron thought that it was above the law also.
Yeah. And thank
you
God
know,
we
can't look at the total picture without looking at the pockets of success and hope, because there are pockets of success and hope.
And the problem is the other pockets are so deep. You know, I don't know how people make so much money off these guardianship cases, but, you know, I mean, these attorneys are selling their souls. You know,
but
when Gregory Miller tells the judge in the Court of Appeals that he represents Dorothy Grega and he knows he's never talked to her in his life, how can he personally live with himself when he knows that he isn't looking after anybody's interest but Sally Lanham? You know,
Janet,
I mean, what kind of thing is that?
Janet, would you want to sell your soul for any amount of money in the world?
No.
Well, there's your answer.
Yeah.
There are some of us that money is not our reason for living.
Yeah. I was on the racketeering case where Janovich got indicted as a sheriff of Pierce County, and there were all these fires for racketeering. And I asked one of the cops, you know, why did you go along with this when Carbone Bell Bonds was making all the money and everything? And it was a big deal case where the feds put a wire on two FBI agents and indicted Janovich for protection money and stuff. And the cop said, I got a turkey a year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what his price was. He wanted to be one of the guys.
Oh, my goodness.
To be a member of the team. I thought he'd say, I got $200,000 or $500,000. But he got paid one turkey during the holidays a year. And he participated in burning down nightclubs just to intimidate and threaten people.
And
Stanovich got indicted and went to prison and wasn't a sheriff anymore. But that was a big deal case. So you never know what a person's price is. That sheriff's price was just a turkey.
Well, I would have been happy to pay for a turkey to say this all. That would have been a great blessing to me to pay for a turkey every year to save that man's soul.
Yeah, it's just scary. And then I've worked on cases where the FBI agent or the whoever it was, not FBI, but they were paid $200,000 not to pursue a case. So, you know, you just don't know what a person's price is. And I told that to Gary Reese. And Gary Reese said, yeah, I know somebody's dirty, but I don't know who it is. Gary Reese was Customs. And the IRS and FBI and Customs were all working on it. I don't know who the dirty Fed was, but they got paid $200,000 not to pursue one of the cases. And that was one of my cases, too. So sometimes you don't know what people are paid to not pursue something or look the other way. But the cheapest I've ever heard of is a turkey to, you know, sit
That's
by and...
That's very, very cheap.
Yeah, and so
really,
you never know what a person's motive is.
Well, I think the important thing is that the vast majority of people in this country cannot be bought for a turkey or for a whole lot more than a turkey because their family and their faith in God and their integrity mean far more to them than anything you could buy.
No, I don't think that's true. I think people don't want to be involved. So I think people just look the other way because they don't want to be involved. It isn't about the price of something. It's just about the fact that they do not care because they don't want to be involved. And I think we need to start looking at what we're seeing. And if something is inherently wrong, we've got to become involved. And that's why shows like this are so significantly important because these kind of things are our forum to voice what we personally know, and then somebody else may call up with another story, and we might find something else from somebody else.
Well, that's kind of the purpose of these shows.
We
try to get people from all over the country. Linda Kincaid, of course, an elder advocate there in California who has done massive work on these shows. Beverly out of Florida there who got into this because of her father, Al Katz, and trying to defend and protect him. We've got Lisa Belanger out there in Massachusetts who's fighting a monumental battle trying to save her father and his estate from these thugs and thieves. But we try to get people, Janet, from all over the country. And I do that for a specific reason. It's so that people know it isn't just you. I talk to so many people who think they're the only ones this has happened to. And they need to understand it is happening in every state, in every city, in every county. It is happening 24/7. And we have a government that is sitting on its thumbs and absolutely will not move to stop what is nothing less than organized crime.
Yeah, I think it should be criminal when these kind of things happen. You know, I think what Michael Lawyer did and what Sally Lanham did and what Gregory Miller did, I think their actions are criminal. I think what Commissioner Bradburn Johnson did is criminal. And what Jennifer Baharsky did is criminal. But nobody seems to care.
You have to find a prosecutor who is willing to indict and prosecute.
Yeah.
And that is not an easy ticket.
Yeah, because nobody seems to care.
The closest we've come to anybody that would even look into anything like that is Joe Rubicek down there in Florida, and he's the economic crimes investigator for the Attorney General's office in I think it's Miami-Dade.
He's the exploitation detective for the Broward County Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
I'm fairly sure.
At least
sure.
He's somebody somewhere.
And
yeah.
He is outstanding. He writes, he trains officers all over the state of Florida, and I think outside of the state as well. He is absolutely committed.
Wonderful.
Committed to pursuing those people who have decided of their own free will that money means more to them than the life of a completely vulnerable, helpless person. And
good.
Joe Rubicek is an outstanding example of law enforcement committed to protecting our elders.
Oh, good.
If we only had more. Girls,
well,
we're down
you know,
to about three minutes here. Janet, this time has just gone way too fast, and I have to apologize to everybody that's listening. I've had some things dumped in my lap today that I wasn't expecting and upset me really bad about the deaths of two individuals in Indiana at the hands of predators, and I'll be investigating that and looking into that and reporting on that as soon as I have more information. These people were medicated to death with Seroquel and Zyprexa, which, of course, if you're an Alzheimer's or a person suffering dementia, both of these medications exacerbate those problems. Neither is approved for use on the elderly. They're black label drugs. The intent of these drugs is to speed and hasten death. That's what these drugs are used for. They use them on our military who come home with post-traumatic stress and they die in the middle of the night because their heart simply stops. They say, oh, well, they took their medication wrong. They committed suicide. No, they didn't. They were drugged to death. And they are doing the same thing to our elderly people by force-feeding them these damn drugs that are meant to kill them. That's exactly what you have. This angers me so badly, I can't stand it. We have people being murdered, absolutely murdered, for greed. And that's all that this is. We've got these two predators down there in Seminole County, Florida, who have amassed multi-million dollars estate as the elderly have dropped dead at their feet. And they were medicated to death, or they were neglected to death under guardianship. And yet
euthanasia.
Yes, it is, Beverly.
It's euthanasia.
Exactly. It's government-sanctioned murder. And so it's just, and then too, I wanted to mention quickly, Sarah Harvey and Gary Harvey, Bobby Schindler has filed the petition for guardianship, and as I understand it, that's to be heard the end of the month. Hopefully he can get guardianship of Gary, and this nightmare can be over for that man and for Sarah. I think of them constantly. We've got about a minute and a half left here. Janet, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know how busy you are. This is just, I'll have to go back and listen. You, like me, talk fast.
And, thank you so much, Marty. You're just a life everyone.
Well, I don't know about that. We're
you're
still out
wonderful.
Here trying.
I totally appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on. And Beverly, thank you so much for co-hosting again tonight. You kind of bring a sense of calmness to everything, and I was upset this evening. I spent the afternoon crying over these people.
Aww.
And I just,
I'm so angry.
I'm so angry that this is allowed to continue. And one way or the other, I make a promise and a vow to all of you, one way or another, I will bust this thing wide open.
Good.
And get this stopped. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And so I want to thank everybody in the chat room. And I say my apologies to everybody. I was really upset this evening. Janet, you were a powerhouse. Beverly, as always, a very welcome co-host. We'll see you all next
thank
week.
You, Marty.
And
thank you
have a
much.
Good evening. Thanks,
thank
Janet.
You.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.